Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
We hear a lot about failing schools in not only Pennsylvania but around the nation. We hear the answer to the problem is to dump more money into the system. Well, if money would fix the problem, our schools should be the top notch in the world. The United States spends more money on education than any other nation in the industrialized world. Pennsylvania spends thousands per public school student each year. Yet only 21 out of 355 schools in the Pittsburgh region have 90% or more of fifth graders proficient in both reading and math. 30% of fifth graders cannot read or do math at their grade level. Statistics from Philadelphia are even more dismal. Yet these students and their parents are trapped in the schools which are not delivering. The education the students need to be successful is not there. School choice has proven successful in other areas of the country. Mitch Daniels, governor of Indiana, just signed a school choice law on May 6th. However, there are opponents of school choice, and one is President Obama, who stopped the D.C. Opportunity Scholarship Program last year. And he did that even though a study published last year found that D.C. voucher recipients had graduation rates of 91%. That's significantly higher than the public school average of only 56% who graduate. But what about here in Pennsylvania? My guest today is Cheryl Boyce with the Pittsburgh-based Commonwealth Education Organization. Thanks, Cheryl, for being with us.
You're welcome.
So what is going on in Pennsylvania? To begin with, let's start with how much does the state pay for each public school student on average?
Well, it's somewhere around 14. But in reality, we put more into the schools per pupil costs that are underperforming than we put into schools that are performing better, which if you could follow that, for example, you were talking about the Pittsburgh area. There are 144 schools across the Commonwealth that are in the lower 5%. I'm going to use one in the Pittsburgh area. I'm not going to name names because I keep picking on this school district, but they're spending $20,000 per pupil. They spend $28 million a year for about 1,200 students.
Okay, back up. You're saying they spend $20,000 per year on each of the students in their school, in their district.
Yes.
But they are in the lower 5 percentile as far as graduation rates. Is that the...
Well, it's actually proficiency level. Okay. They're only at 16%. And these are state figures. Mm-hmm. I'm not making this up. 16% proficiency in math and reading. So for $20,000 in that particular district, you have to realize there's a formula that the state uses. Some districts get more state money than others based on local property tax, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This particular district gets a lot of state funding. So of the $20,000, a lot of that money is coming from the state. So
which equals tax dollars, of course.
Yes. But we're only getting a 16% proficiency level in the math and reading.
That's
for
not
$20,000.
And $20,000 per student, they're only getting a 16%
proficiency
in math rating.
Right. And obviously, the dropout rate in that particular district is higher, and then you have to look at what is that costing us. And there have been studies out there that cost $33,000 to put someone in the state prison system for a year. So if they don't have a job and they have no place to go, then we know that we're going to end up, in a lot of cases, spending $33,000 to incarcerate these students, which is, you have to look at that figure, too.
Right.
And they've done studies. I actually found one which was rather interesting, and it was rather lengthy because it talked about, in Pennsylvania, 20% of students do not graduate from high school. They drop out.
20%.
Okay. And in September of 2008, the Pennsylvania Department of Labor released what that means, the tax and transfer physical impacts of dropping out of high school in Pennsylvania. And it breaks it down into a lot of stats, which I won't go over all the stats, but it talks about what happens as far as welfare, the prison system, lack of home ownership, Medicaid, welfare, child care. It breaks it down as to what that's going to cost us long haul. So the $20,000 we're spending for a school that's not working, and then the kids drop out, and then you add exorbitant amounts of money on top of that because they have no place to go.
Yeah, wow.
They don't have the skills to get the job to function.
Yeah, I guess we don't think about the overall impact, across the board impact of students who do not graduate from high school. And we have to consider that also.
Yeah, and this study is very, very lengthy. And as you go through it, and they break it down by the different areas it's impacted. I mean, even if you look at what they're going to make, they're going to have minimum wage jobs and the amount of money that they're going to put back into the tax system with local taxes. I mean, most of these people are not going to own homes, so they're not going to pay property tax.
Right.
They're not going to pay higher wage taxes. They're not putting money back in locally, state-wise, or federally.
Wow.
But they're taking money out.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the figures and look at the reality of what this is costing because these kids drop out or these kids are in failing schools, it's astronomical.
Well, you know, these kids are stuck. And I read a couple months ago about Ohio, I think it was in the Toledo area, I think. Anyway, somewhere in Ohio, a mom had enrolled her child in the school district where her parents live.
Right.
So that this child could get a good education because he was attending a failing school in there in that area in Ohio. And so she enrolled him. She took the child to her parents each morning to make sure he got on the bus or whatever to go to that school that was giving him a good education. But as soon as her home school district found out about it, I forget what the charges were, but they arrested her. They charged her with whatever the crime was, took her to trial. She's now sitting in jail.
Right.
Because she wanted her child to have a good education. And this was the only way that she saw that it was going to be able to, you know, that it was going to happen for her to do this.
They prosecuted her because they're saying that actually she was taking money that she was entitled to because in reality she was in a school district that she didn't belong in.
That she wasn't paying taxes in.
She wasn't paying taxes in. Right. But the problem is that's the flaw in the system.
Yeah.
Right now, unless you have the resources to pay out of pocket, as you're continuing to pay taxes into the public school system, you can't put your child another place. And a lot of these parents, like this mom, did not have the resources to pay to send their child to a private school or wherever she wanted to go out of pocket.
Right, right. You know, I just thought they were going to make an example of her. I mean, that was the whole purpose of it. And I just think it's tragic because she was doing this for the welfare of her child.
Right. And we at CEO get a lot of phone calls from people across the state, parents from various school districts seeking, and because our name is Commonwealth, they think we're the state, and what they're seeking is scholarships and funding to remove their children from the public school system.
Right.
Just because, we have to understand something, just because a parent is poor doesn't mean they don't care about the safety and well-being of their children.
Oh, absolutely, right.
And they may be locked into their community because they can't afford to move for whatever reason. But a lot of the parents specifically are really worried about the safety of their children.
Right, and they want their child to be able to do better
than they're doing.
They want them to have
a better life.
And they see the trap there.
Right, exactly. And they know that. They know that education is the way out.
Mm-hmm.
They may not have received it themselves, but they basically want a better opportunity for their kids. And so to make the assumption that every person that's living in some of these districts don't care, because you're going to hear that from the opponent. They're going to say, well, these parents just don't care.
Who says that?
Well, the opponents do.
Oh, okay,
and I've talked to legislators who are against the whole concept of school choice, and they'll say, well, it's really the parents' fault because these parents just don't care.
These legislators, some of them just don't live in the real world.
Well, these legislators, when you talk to them, they also, a lot of them, send their kids to private
schools. Oh, yeah.
Which is interesting when you ask it. But here's one of the safety factors, because the Commonwealth Foundation just released this at the end of May, and it was talking about the stats on the safety of these 144 the lowest 5%, and there was 1,630 assaults on students in 2009 in those schools. 953 assaults on staff, you know, 504 illegal weapon possessions, and it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So for many parents, it's not just about the education, it's about the safety factor.
Safety of the child, yeah.
I
was just going to say, is there currently any kind of school voucher or scholarship programs in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, we do have currently EITC, and what it is basically, a company can make a donation and they get a tax break, and these are small scholarships that are given. This is private money, and it's given to the students. And organizations, for example, the Pennsylvania Family Institute is one of them that actually oversees this process, and they will get scholarship applications and they will distribute the money. That's not our tax dollars.
Right. It's from businesses.
It's from businesses. They get a tax break. It's called EITC. And so it's like a scholarship.
Right.
It's just like if somebody in a business decides to give their alma mater, the university, a scholarship, it's the same principle,
Okay. Basically.
And then they can write it off.
Right.
That's the motivation.
But this would go to help kids from troubled schools sent to good schools.
Right.
Okay.
The only problem is those are small amounts of money,
right.
And I don't know on the average what it is. I'd have to find out. And they are legislatively, both in the House and Senate, trying to expand that program through two pieces of legislation. House Bill 1330, which actually passed, is an expansion of that existing program. That's all that is. They're allowing more money to go into that system.
So at this point, there's a limit as to how much businesses can donate.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and they want to increase that in both pieces of legislation, and they would increase the amount going in, and they're upping it really. They're trying to include more middle income. Like if you made $75,000, it'll expand that to include more middle income. Because one of the things that people say about this whole concept is, well, that's only dealing with kids in the failing schools. What about all the parents? Well, they're trying to up it, and more middle-income people in these pieces of legislation would be included. However, again, they're small, little scholarships, and sometimes that just doesn't make up for.
It's all private money.
Yeah, okay. And it doesn't make up for the actual tuition going into some of these private schools.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go into a Christian school, a charter school, a parochial school, sometimes those little scholarships don't cut it, and the parents may have to have two jobs or whatever to supplement it on top of the EITC.
Okay. And you say HB 1330 has passed in the House?
There's a lot of confusion in Harrisburg at the moment.
really?
Yeah, yes.
That never happens.
No, but it's interesting to watch this dynamic because what's happened is for the longest time we obviously know that Democrats had control, and of course they're not going to do anything to do school reform or school choice they're going to protect the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
The sad part of what's happening currently in Harrisburg is the Republicans have a chance now that they have control, to do educational reform.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of pieces of legislation and things that people want to look at or they're working on. So it's really about reform. And EITC and vouchers are part of that reform. The problem is the right and left hand in the Republican Party can't agree how to do this. The House passed 1330. That's an increase of an existing program.
Mm-hmm.
That's nothing new. That's not fixing the fact that we're spending $20,000 for a school with a 16% proficiency.
Yeah.
They want to still put that money into the schools. They have this general fund that they put money in, and they divvy it up based on this formula, and nobody has, in the House so far, has addressed that. 1330 does not address that.
So it's still putting money into... It's not really reform. It is to a point. Just it changes the formula or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still putting money into state money, into tax dollars, into failing schools.
Exactly.
Without really addressing the problem of the schools failing.
Right. Right.
Okay. Just still dumping money into the bottomless pit.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Now, Senate Bill 1, which addresses that because they have vouchers. And a voucher is different than EITC. Voucher's philosophy is this. The money, it's a profound philosophical difference. Does the money belong to the system, or does the money belong to the child? And what the voucher is, the money follows the student. You just because you live in a certain zip code doesn't mean automatically that money gets dumped into that school regardless. If that child decides they want to go to a charter school, a percentage of that money, the state money, only the state money in vouchers, follows that child into the charter school instead of continually being dumped into the public school system. Now, what happens is the public school gets to keep their property taxes. The local taxes don't follow the child.
So only the state money follows the child into the charter school.
Or
private school?
Yeah, it would be private, charter, cyber, parochial, Christian, all of those combinations. The only problem, there's a little logistic issue, isn't it? Because there's like not any hardcore tuition. A lot of people who homeschool their kids say, what about us? That's a tricky one. That's going to have to be decided at a later time. I don't know how they're going to address that, because a lot of times that's sort of like, that's no hard cost. If you send your child to parochial school, you know the tuition is X amount of dollars.
Right, right.
So that's a hard cost, and you could sort of track that, so mm-hmm. it's a little easier to deal with that. So any combination of those schools can get voucher money. The idea would be, if you're a student that is spent in a school district, that you have $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to actually use, here's a really good example, because I got this, and it sort of explains this. This is Harrisburg, okay? They're one of the failing schools. They spend $17,675 right now per student in the district. A voucher student is going to get $8,828. That's state money. That will follow the student. The district gets to keep $8,847.
So the district is not losing all the...
they're losing the student and the responsibility of that student.
Right,
but
still
they're getting to keep...
They're still getting state money, though. I mean, not state money, but money.
Right. In some districts, and we talked about that here in our organization, because we have people on school boards, some of the suburban districts who have nice homes, higher property taxes, most of what they have is really local money, and they get some state money, but not as much as the local money. So really what they would lose if a child would take a voucher, for example, would be a whole lot less, because most of theirs is local. But again, in a district like Harrisburg, which gets a substantial amount of mm-hmm. state money, the voucher would follow the student. And on the average, they're saying, on the average, it comes out to about $5,000 a student. The voucher money.
The average voucher would be about $5,000 per student.
Yeah, and when you look at the cost of a lot of these other schools, that would be close to what they charge. I mean, you have to look at what it costs to have, for example, there's a parochial high school not too far from this district I was telling you where they spend $20,000 mm-hmm, a student. Mm-hmm. It costs, in that particular high school, $8,000 to educate that child.
Okay.
20 at the public school, 8 at the parochial high school. So,
wow.
I mean, there's a big difference,
and the
districts are not completely out of money, because now you don't have the student, and you've got this additional money.
You've got this additional money, not a student to spend it on, so that would be really advantageous for the school. So,
they're not looking at it.
I'm sure the teachers' unions are just thrilled about this, though, right?
Oh,
they get all this extra money, but the districts get this extra money, but not the student to be responsible for?
No, actually, what they're worried about is this. If you get an opportunity to see the video, the cartel, it talks about the New Jersey School District.
Mm-hmm.
It's an outstanding, it walks you step by step where the problem is and addresses the union. You have to look at what we spend money on, okay? If you've got a class of 24 kids, 25 kids, and multiply that by $20,000, and think about what you're paying that teacher. You're paying that teacher, what, $60,000, $70,000? It depends
mm-hmm.
on the school district
and the
teacher. Okay, you deduct that. Where's all that other money going?
That's a good question.
There is so much overhead. I was just thinking about, I live in the community that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the overhead now. I look at back in the day, our high school had twice as many students because we're baby boomers. We have half as many kids. The building is now twice the size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this gigantic auditorium that has a dance studio and that looks better than a college auditorium. We have a press booth in our football stadium that looks better than one in college. I mean, we have twice as many guidance counselors. We have twice as many principals. So that's
mm-hmm.
all overhead that we functioned without for many years.
And did so successfully. And I'm sure that their graduation rate was probably higher.
Right.
And kids did better on the test, test scores were better.
Right.
But yeah, more money's being dumped into the system that is just, like you're saying, going to overhead with more additional principals and fancier buildings.
Right. And all of
not these education.
People. Right, all of these people come in, of course they join the union, and then there's the union dues. Of course, that's the thing that the union doesn't want to see happen, because if you start moving students out and they go to, you know, the parochial school down the street, then maybe you don't need as many teachers. Well, if you
mm-hmm.
don't need as many teachers, guess what? There's not as much dues money. So they're looking at their pocket.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so they're looking at it. They don't want this to happen, because they don't want to lose teachers. They don't want this system to change, because it's so padded now
mm-hmm.
that They want to protect the status quo.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
At all costs.
Yeah, if SB1 were to pass in both the Senate and the House,
right,
and become law, because Governor Corbett has said he will sign it.
Yes.
Who would the scholarships be available to? Which students?
It starts out, there's actually three phases to this thing. In the text of the bill, this is what it says. This is an initial. This is the long-term goal is to offer assistance to all the families. So eventually they want to make this available to everybody. But they had to start somewhere.
Okay.
So they started
mm-hmm.
with the most profound problems. And so the first year, it primarily goes to the low-income students attending one of the lowest-achieving schools, the lowest 144 schools.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the second year, all low-income students residing within the attendance area of a low-achieving school.
Okay.
The third year would include all low-income students regardless of the school district. When I say low-income, what they're using as a factor is they use 130% of the poverty level. So for a family of four, you would have to have an annual income of around $29,000.
Okay.
Okay. And then the fourth year, and this was something they added because what happened with SB 1, the governor came back to them. It went through the education committee, went into appropriations, and the governor came to them and then he wanted to make a few changes with some of the dollar amounts, and then went back into the Senate Education Committee. It's sort of like landlocked right now. It's not moving to the House. It hasn't gone to the floor of the Senate at all. They did add a fourth year, and what they would do is, because Senate Bill 1 has EITC, those scholarships,
okay.
They have vouchers. Because the philosophy is this. How they're going to impact the middle income is they're going to free up EITC so kids in low income that are using that now won't need that because they can get a voucher.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That'll free up the money in EITC for middle income parents. And they've upped the income level. It's like $75,000 for a family of four, and then you add $15,000 for every kid after that. So if you get three kids, you add another $15,000, you can make $90,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they up the amount of money into EITC. So that has two components. And that's in limbo right now because the House has 1330 that they passed, bringing over to the Senate, that only has one component.
Okay.
So the debate is, do we do real reform, which would be vouchers and EITC,
mm-hmm.
or do we just expand an existing program?
Dumping
Does that
money,
get us continue, what we want?
Continue dumping money to the bottomless pit.
Right. Because here's another thing that people have to think about. This is not just about 144 failing school districts. This is about a study. In the middle of all of this, we came across a study which I thought was profound. In January of 2009, the Federal Department of Education looked at the remediation rate of students in our college system, our state university system,
mm-hmm.
and community colleges in the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
One out of three kids
wasn't good.
Have to be remediated.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the dollar amounts that we're spending to send kids to college, and we have to remediate them before they
mm-hmm.
can take a college-level class,
yeah.
it's outrageous. And they only looked at the state university system and the community colleges. They didn't look at Penn State or, the University of Pittsburgh or those schools, which also have this problem.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact. So we add that on top. And basically what they're saying is they're looking at our kids and they're saying that only 40% of the kids come out of the schools that we're deeming the better schools are prepared to go on to college.
Yeah.
So it's not just 144 failing schools. It's the fact that kids are going to college from what we say are good schools.
They're still not prepared. They're still not prepared
right.
for college.
They're still not prepared.
So they're not getting it, no matter what school district, there are 500 school districts in the state.
Doesn't
no matter,
matter
what school district you're looking at, you're still looking at a major problem. So
yeah.
the way I understand it, then SB 1 addresses EITC and
right.
as a combination of that and vouchers. And
right.
it would, if this were to pass, it would free up the EITC money to
right.
allow that to be available for middle-income students?
Yeah, more middle-income
okay.
students. It would just, because right now, that's the only option if you're
right.
in a failing school.
Right.
And that would, because let's face it, if you're a parent, you're going to want to take the voucher money because it's more.
Right.
And you're going to want that money to follow your child.
Right. Right.
So that's going to free up money, number one, that's already being used.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got more money on top of that,
okay.
which, more middle income people would be able
so
to
So it's like a four-year process, I guess would
right.
be the word, to get
right.
it to more students, starting with the lowest income, lowest 144 schools in the state.
Right.
Those students would be available first year, and then it works its way up to where it would be available to the more middle-income students with family of four was making $75,000.
Right.
And for each additional child, $15,000. So those families, within 4 years, will qualify.
Well, actually, to tell you the honest truth, they could actually qualify out of the chute. What they're doing is they're phasing in, like I said, first year, all low-income students attending the lowest achieving.
Mm-hmm.
Second year, all low-income students residing with persistently. And that would be, they would expand the low-income, the definition of low-income. Third year will include all low-income students regardless of the school. So if you're in a, like my school district, which has a certain percentage of, we're not one of the 144 mm-hmm. lower-performing schools, but we have kids because of, you know, they look at the free and subsidized lunch kind of thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And those kids in my school district in year three, and that's the year that scares them. See, a lot of the, and I've talked to even some Republicans, see, so far, you know, if you say the lowest 144, and they'll say, okay, that's okay. Well, we'll do the lowest income in the lowest achieving schools. But see, that's sort of nice and neat. That's not real reform. That's sort of like a modified mm-hmm. version of EIGC.
Yeah.
They just don't want
right.
total school choice.
Right. So,
and year three is what scares them.
Okay, that's the scary one for the legislators. So
yeah.
Basically, what should citizens do to get this moved forward?
Well, first of all, I suggest if everybody gets a chance to get the cartel and watch it
okay.
so you can be informed and understand this whole process.
Okay.
It clearly outlines it. You can go to the Freedom Works organization
mm-hmm.
who will give that to you for free and have a little meeting with your neighbors and sit down and watch this.
Okay.
It's going to talk about the New Jersey school system, but at the end it's going to say this is everywhere, and
mm-hmm.
it is.
Right, which absolutely is.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, our neighbors to the east have the same problems that we do, so
yeah.
it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And get informed, and then this is the most profound question of all of this, because it's not about educational reform, and it's just not about school choice. It's about parental rights, because who decides where and how the children should be educated?
Right.
And that's
yeah.
the fundamental question. Do we leave it in the hands of the people that currently do it, to do with it like they've been doing,
mm-hmm.
or do we finally say, wait a minute, we're paying the taxes, the money should follow the child,
right.
the parents should have the choice to monitor this and decide where the child goes.
Right. Okay.
So that's the fundamental question. And once people figure out what they believe in, then you go to your legislators and you say to them, you find out, in the House, above and beyond EITC, what are they going to do about real reform?
Mm-hmm.
EITC is not real reform. It's nice to do that.
Right.
And it helps. And I'm glad they're doing it.
But it doesn't solve all the problems.
Right. But now we've got the Republicans there, and we're going to say to them, look, in New Jersey, in Ohio, in Indiana, in Wisconsin, we are seeing real reform effort.
Yeah.
We have sat here all these years dumping more money into a system that doesn't like parents,
yeah.
doesn't cooperate with parents, consistently wants more money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, for teachers,
yeah.
the system, I mean, if you're a good teacher, the system isn't working for you either.
That's right. It's got to be frustrating for parents, students, and teachers. We can't forget that. Well, if folks had more questions about this, how could they get information from you guys?
Well, they can go on our website, or they can call our office. And I would say go to our website, because we did, our last newsletter did explain this
mm-hmm.
at in some length. And I also would say go to, there's two other places. The Commonwealth Foundation in Harrisburg, on their webpage,
okay.
has been very actively involved in this, and they give updates on that. I did talk to Senator Pakula, who is sponsoring this bill, and
okay.
you can go to his homepage, which
okay.
is www.PICCOLA.org, and he has actually on his homepage, he shows the actual legislation. You can read it, and you can also, there's a synopsis of it if you want to look at that too.
Okay.
And he gives updates about where it's at, and you can, you know, contact them and find out where
okay.
it is in the process. But you need to find out where your state senator or state representative is on this.
Stands
kind
on
of
this
thing.
Issue. So what? So your website is what? CEOPA.org. Okay.
Right. And our last newsletter, which was April, actually outlines school choices about students and their options for success.
Okay.
You can click on there, and it'll explain
okay,
it.
Okay, it's
more
right there on the
detail.
Website. Okay. Well, I do encourage folks to go to your website, CEOPA.org, to look at that newsletter. Also, Commonwealth Foundation. I believe that's Commonwealth Foundation.org.
Yes.
And then www.PICCOLA.org.
Right.
Check those three websites to get information about SB1, because this is something we definitely need. And Cheryl, thanks for your expertise on this, and for all the hours you spend in trying to digest this stuff. I really appreciate
yeah.
that.
You're
and,
very welcome. This is very important. I don't
absolutely.
Think we're ever going to have this opportunity. If we don't do this now, we may never get to
that's
do this.
That's true. Hey, take care.
Okay.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in defending traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA at Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, 16323, or visit their website at afafpa.org. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of American Family Radio, Lighthouse Ministries of Franklin, AFA, and AFAFPA.